Reishir, the Masechta Nida, Daf Chav Zayin. We will begin on Daf Chav Zayin, Amar Aleph, at the third line. Amar Rav Bashel, Amar Ramas, Amar Shmuel. Ma'is V'tolos Ashul Yibavlad Adasara Yamin. The Gemara teaches us that there was a shulya that was expelled from a woman's body 10 days after this woman had a child, and the Chacham said that shulya should be attributed to that child. In other words, not to assume that this shulya represents another child, and therefore we would have to begin tumas leida all over again. Rather, we could assume that the shulya, this afterbirth, came from a child that was born 10 days ago. However, says the Gemara, v'loy amru toilen el b'shulya habal chavlad. When is this said? Says the Gemara, it's only when the child was born, and after the child was born, there was a shulya that came. There, says the Gemara, we could assume that this shulya is from the child. However, if first there's a shulya and then there's a child born, then we cannot, says the Gemara, necessarily assume that shulya is connected to that child. We have to be concerned that the shulya is one child and that the vlad is another child. And as the Mefarshim teach us, that whenever the Gemara uses the words Maisa, that means that is actually the Halach LeMaisa, what we should follow as far as the Halach is concerned. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Abba Bachana, Amar Rav Yochanan. Maisa betalas Shulya b'Vlad ad Asrim v'Shloishim Yoyim. Similar situation, where Shulya was born, was expelled from the mother many days after she had the child, 23 days later, and they said that should not be viewed as another child, but again, this shulya should be viewed as the afterbirth of the child that was just born even 23 days ago. Amalei, Rav Yosef, to which Rav Yosef commented, it wasn't 23 days, it was Esen v'Abr Amritlan, it was actually 24 days when this episode happened. Says the Gemara, Amr of Acha Berei der Avira, Amr of Yitzchak, Mais in the Shtal Havlad Acha Chaveri. There was a time when a woman was carrying two children, and one child came out after the second child, Shloshim v'Shloshim Yoyim, 33 days later. Amle Rav Yosef, to which Rav Yosef said, it wasn't 33 days, Shloshim v'Arba Amritlan, it was actually 34 days. So, as the Mefarshim explained, it's difficult to accept that two Gemaras, actually one following the other, where we have this both the same situation, 23 and 24 days, one day difference, 33 and 34 days difference. So Mefarshim explained that there really isn't actually a machlokes in these two cases. They're just looking at it from different perspectives. Meaning, in 24 days, you could have 23 Me'es Laces. You could have 23 24-hour periods. Or, another way that I saw that the Mefarshim explained, that obviously the Shilya, or the child born, wasn't necessarily born exactly at the beginning or at the end of the day. So the Manda Omer that has the larger number, 24 or 34, counts even the day that the child was born as one of the days, or the child or the shulya came out as one of the days. The other mandomer, on the other hand, counts only full days, and the actual day that the shulya or the child were born wasn't the full day, and therefore he doesn't include it in the count. But therefore, these two statements that were just made in the Gemara don't in any way necessarily represent a machlokes. Before we begin our next Gemara, a few words of introduction. The first word of introduction is that what we're going to say now as how it worked in the times of Chazal with women having children and when children can be born, were born, and when children weren't born, is different b'zman hazeh. That was the way we're describing is in the time of Chazal. In the time of Chazal, explained the Mefarshim, and this will be based on a Gemara that we're going to learn later in our Masechta, women had children born either in the 7th month or in the 9th month. A child born in the 8th month, in the time of pregnancy, in the time of Chazal, could not survive. Furthermore, the Gemara says that a child born in the 7th month did not necessarily have to be born at the end of the 7th month. He could have been born any time during the month and survive. Whereas a child born in the 9th month was always born at the end, was always born at the end of the month. In fact, up to the point that I saw a tshuva where there was a couple who did not have children for many years, and then the woman got pregnant and her husband got very sick and ultimately died, and then she had a baby. And the question that came up, and then that child unfortunately did not survive. The question was that woman obligated to have Yibum? The question really was based on if that child was not a Nephil, then the child would exempt its mother from a Chiv of Yibum. If the child, on the other hand, was a Nephil, then the mother would be obligated in Yibum. And the way they were able to determine that the child was not a Nephil was that they were able to figure out when the last possible time this couple could have had relations, and based on that calculation, they knew that the mother, that this child was a child not born in the 7th month of pregnancy, but born in the 9th month of pregnancy. And as our Gemara, as we just said, in those times, a child born in the 9th month went full term, so that was a proof that the child wasn't a Nephil and that the mother was exempt from Yibum. So now the Gemara says, we have here in this last piece of Gemara that we learned, where the Gemara says that there was a time interval between the birth of the two children of 33 or 34 days. So says the Gemara, according to the opinion that even a woman who carries into the 9th month does not have to carry full 9 months and still can have a child, so we could understand how there could be a time difference between these two children of 33 or 34 days. Because the first child was born at the end of the 7th month of pregnancy, the other child was born at the beginning of the 9th month, and there could be an interval between these two births of 33 or 34 days. However, El Amanda Omer, Yuletis Letitia, according to the Amanda Omer that holds that a child that's born in the 9th month, and Yuletis Mukhtayim, is always born at the end of the 9th month, Michael Amemer, because what the Gemara means to say is as follows. If the first child was born at the end of the 7th month, and as we just said, the second child cannot have been born in the 8th month, because children that were born in the 8th month could not survive. So what must have happened was that this child was born at the end of the 9th month. So even if we take the end of the 7th month to the end of the 9th month, there's more than 33 or 34 days. And the child, as we just said, could not have been born in the child could not have been born in the 8th month. So how is it possible that one child should be born 33 or 34 days before the other child? Says the Gemara, Eipach Shmatza. Indeed, we have to reverse the two stories that we just learned in the Gemara. It was Shloishim v'Shloish L'Shilya, the time from when the Shilya, it was expressed from the mother's body, from when the baby was born was 33 days, and Esther v'Shloisha, the story of the child being born, one child of the other, was with an interval of love, was an interval of 23 days. And now we can well understand the story. Both of the children were born in the 7th month. One was born at the beginning of the seventh month, because as we're learning now, this man Domer holds that a child born in the seventh month can be born any time during the seventh month. So this child was born at the beginning of the seventh month, the other child was born at the end of the seventh month, and that's how we have a 23 or 24 day interval. Says the Gemara, Omer of Avin Bar of Odo, Omer of Nachman Ish Kvash Orin, Vamrle Beish Orin, Mais of Nishtah Vlad Acha Chavero Shlosh Chadoshim. There was a situation where there was an interval between two twins being born with 3 months. Vareheim Yoshim Lufanein of Beis Midrash, and says the Gemara, these two children are actually sitting here in the Beis Medrash, Umman Ninu, and who are these two children? Yehuda Vechizkia B'nei Reb Chiya. So the Gemara now assumes that how is it possible for two children to be born with 3 months apart? It must be that the mother became pregnant with the second child after she was already pregnant with the first child. Ask the Gemara, V'hamamar, have we not learned that ain isha misaberis v'chayzeres misaberis, that a woman cannot become pregnant once she's pregnant? So how did it happen here that this woman became pregnant even though she was already pregnant previously? Says the Gemara, Amar Abaya, that's not what happened. What happened rather was, Tipa Akas Hoysa, when the mother conceived, there was one act of conception, but that one act of conception, Nischalkel Shtayim, was divided into two pieces, Echad Nigma Tzrasa B'Tchil Sheva, and one of these two children was born at the beginning of the seventh month, Ve'echad B'Soif Tisha, and the other child was born at the end of the ninth month, but it was really only one act of conception. Mefarshim asks that here we see that two children could be born at the same, from one conception with such a difference. But we learned previously that Rav said in yesterday's shiur that if there's such a long difference, then if a shiur comes out after such a long time, we assume that it was from a different child altogether, not from the same conception. So some say that this story that we just learned in the Gemara, even though the Gemara has been able to explain what happened, it's still unlikely. In difference, another nafkamina that the Rishonim say, as we learned at the end of yesterday's shiur, matters of the first child is a viable child versus when it's not a viable child. Says the Gemara, Shuli v'bayis, if there's a shuli in the house, we learned habayis tamei, and the house is tamei. Tan rabbanan. So says the Gemara, Shuli v'bayis, if there's a shuli in the house, habayis tamei. Says the Braisa, Lachal Shulya Vlad. Not to say that a Shulya necessarily represents that there's a child. Al Shain Shulya, Shain Vlad Imo. With every Shulya, there is a Vlad. Dibre Rameya. That is the opinion of Rameya. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Mitarim. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon say that just because there's a Shulya in the house does not mean that there's Tum in the house. Omrelo Rameya. And they said to Rameya, Yat Moida, do you not agree, Shem Hoitziu Besefel, that if the Shilya was taken out in a bowl to another room, in other words, the Shilya was expressed in one room in the home, and then it was transported to another room in the home, Shem Hoitziu Besefel Abeis Achitzen, that if it was taken out in a bowl to another room, Hu Tohar, that it's Tohar. Amlehen, so he said Avel. So Mefarshim asks, why does the Gemara assume for sure that if it was taken out to another room, even Rameya will agree that it's Tahar? So Mefarshim says, because we look at the wording of the Braisa. The Braisa says, Shilya Babayis. What does Shilya Babayis mean? That it's in that room where it was discharged from its mother. But in another room, Rameya would agree that it's Tamei. Furthermore, why does he speak about a case where it was taken out in a sefel, in a bowl? So some say because that's the normal way how a shilya is transported. Others say that even when it was transported in a bowl, so it's much less likely to have become dissolved if it was taken out in a bowl, still says Rameya that it's tohar when it's taken to another room. V'lama, and indeed, why? L'fish einai, because it no longer is in existence. Amalai, to which they said to him, k'shem she'einai v'bayis achitzin, once it's taken to another room, you agree that it's no longer in existence. Kach einai v'bayis apnimi, so too should it be in the room where it was discharged, that the shulya should not be considered in existence. Amalahem, to which Remeir responded, you can't compare where the Shilya was under agitation once, the first time it left its mother's body, to where now it experienced a second act of agitation when it was taken to the other room. And therefore, says Remeir, in the first room I hold its tame, in the second room we already went through so much agitation, I hold that it's no longer tame. Says the Gemara, Yosra Papa Achurid Rabbi Bekamed Rav Hanuna. Yosra Kamar, my time is Rav Shimon. Why indeed does Rav Shimon hold that it's tahor? So he says, Kol Tuma Shnes Arba Ben Acher, any Tuma that was mixed with something else, Batla becomes Batla. And therefore, here, even though a Shulya represents a child, here, the shilya, when it was expressed with other liquids from the mother's body. Because it was expressed with other liquids from the mother's body, it becomes bottle. I saw that the achronim ask, but isn't a shilya a barrier? And we've learned many times that the halacha is that a barrier doesn't become bottle. So the mefarshim say that when do we say the halacha that a barrier is not bottle? We only say the halacha that a barrier is not bottle when it was first a barrier, and then we want to be mevatel it. So then we say the halacha that a barrier doesn't become batel. But in this situation, it never was in the category of being an independent barrier. And since it was never in the category of being an independent barrier, everybody would agree that we are able to apply the concept of bittel. Amar Papa. So after the Gemara now explained after they were able to explain the opinion of Rav Shimon, said Rav Papa, Haimanami Tamai Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yosi. That also must be the explanation of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yosi's opinion. Achikola. So they laughed at what he said. Maishna. Of course that's the opinion of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda say the exact same thing as Rav Shimon says. So once we were able to explain the opinion of Reb Shimon, obviously, Pshita, that is also the explanation in the opinion of Reb Yosef Yehuda. Amra Papa. So Reb Papa makes a very powerful statement. Afilu koha milsa. Even when somebody says something like this, which brings them to ridicule him, leim inish v'loi lishta kamei Rebbe. A person should say it and not remain silent. Mishum shenemar. As the Pasuk says in Mishle, Im Navalta, if you're ready to become embarrassed, like in this case, where he was embarrassed what he was said, Bisnase, but you do that for Talmud Torah, you will grow, you will be great in learning, but otherwise if you remain silent, you won't grow. So, I saw from Rabbi Aaron Cutler in the Sefer Mishnah of Aaron, that he explains that how would most people explain this Gemara? Most people will explain that the basis of this Gemara is Loi haba, as we learned from Pirkei Avos, Loi habay shalomid, that somebody who's embarrassed doesn't grow in learning. Says Rabbi Aaron, that's not what the Gemara means. Of course that's the truth, as it says in Pirkei Avos. But he says what the Gemara here is much deeper. He says what the Gemara here is teaching us is that a person who wants to grow in learning has to be a person that nothing should get in his way. He's so anxious to grow in learning that whatever it takes for him to understand or to do in order that he should grow in learning is what he will do. And that is what the Gemara is teaching us. Rav Papa said, I don't hold back anything. Whatever is necessary for me to understand, that's what I will do in order that I should be able to grow in learning. Says the Gemara, V'az the Rav Shimon L'tamei. And Rav Shimon here is following his opinion, the Tanya. The halacha is Moli Tarvid Rekev Shenafel Toifer Ofer Kalshu Tomei. The halacha is that if there's a body which Rachman Litzlon decomposed, still that body, if you have a ladle full of that dust of the body that decomposed, is metame. Says the Tanakhama, even if there's some dust in that rekev, it's still metame. Rav Shimon metar. Rav Shimon, on the other hand, says that in such a case, it's tahar. And my tam, Rav Shimon, and explains to Gemara what is the reasoning for what Rav Shimon said. Amar Rava, Ashkechina l'rabbanan de Beirav de Yasi v'kamri, he efshish lo yibush they pray this offer, al pray the achash shel rakav. What ultimately must have happened is that some of the dust was surrounded by offer, v'chosalei, and therefore you no longer have that amount of dust that you need to have to be tamei, and therefore if Shimon holds, it's tahar. V'aminalu, and we said to Rav Shimon, Ad Rabba, we can make an argument just the other way. I'll offer that two specks of dust, of rakav, should surround the offer. And now, you have, not only do you have the shear, but you have more than enough of the shear. So why do you take the approach that it's tamei? Because some of the rakav has become diminished by the offer around it. We should take the opposite approach, that it's certainly now tamei because the rakav surrounds the offer. And the way the Mefarshim explained this machlokes, I saw a number of ways. One explanation I saw is, do we follow the concept of bila, that different items could be totally mixed together? The Mandam says that tamei says that yesh bila. The Mandam says that it's not that way, holds ein bila. Another way is, here, the rakav and the offer are really two distinct different items, but not noticeably different. And the machlokes here is, what is the halacha when you have two different types of items but are not noticeably different? How do we look at it? The Mandam that says tar says that still, since they're two different types, we look at them separately. The other Mandam says that since they're not noticeably different, we look at them as one. Another way of explaining, I saw that Achronim suggest, is that it's connected to the question of heter mitzaref l'isser. Do we combine the heter, which is the offer, to the isser? The mandama that holds tamei says that we do combine heter mitzaref l'isser. The other mandama says that we don't say, in such a situation, heter mitzaref l'isser. But the Gemara is saying that everybody should here agree that we should not take the offer into consideration if it's mostly rakav. Ela Amar Rabba. So what is the explanation for Rav Shimon? Hana Tamid Rav Shimon. The explanation for Rav Shimon's opinion is because Soifa Ketchilasai. He compares the situation where now offer got mixed into the rakav to the situation where you had it from the beginning that way. Because, explains Rabba Rav Shimon's opinion. Matchilasai. Nasa Dover Acha Gangilon. Everybody agrees that if the rakav to start off with wasn't pure rakav, it would not be tamei. Says Rav Shimon, not only is that the situation at the beginning, but even at the end, Af Soifoy Nasla Dover Acha Gangilon, even if later on something gets mixed into it, that also is going to be considered a mixture and it won't be considered rakav, that a malah tavrid rakav is matami. Now Farshim actually say that now we could understand why Rav Papa made the comment when the Gemara before said that this is the reasoning for Rav Shimon, he had to comment, and this is also the explanation in Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, that the Gemara commented, obviously it's the explanation in Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. Don't Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda say the exact same thing as Rav Shimon? But now that we're seeing, explained the Mefarshim, that there could be a number of different ways of understanding the opinion of Rav Shimon, now we need to understand, now we understand why Rav Papa made the comment, and this is the explanation of Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda as well. Maihi. So now the Gemara goes back to what we just mentioned a moment ago, that at the beginning the Rakav is not metama, a molei tavid rakav is not metama unless it's pure. Maihi, what does that mean? The Tanya, eizem eishesh le rakav, what type of corpse can have tumas rakav? And what type of corpse does not have rakov? Says the Braisa. Nikvar Ori. If the mace was buried without any clothing, but Orin Shalshayish, in a coffin made out of marble, Oyal Gabaritzba Shalavonim, or on a stone floor. So if it monolith slum decomposes, there's nothing else here that decomposed besides the body. If the mace was buried in Tachrichim, or in a wood coffin, or in a floor made out of bricks, so it's decomposed, so parts of these other materials decompose with the rakov, so therefore you don't have pure rakov. Says the Braisa further, the halacha of rakov was only said by a mace. The mutei harav deloy, by a person that was killed, there wouldn't be any rakov. And Rashi explains that the reason there is no rakov, by someone who was killed, because the person who was killed lost some blood as he was killed, and therefore the mace was a mace that was chaser. It wasn't a complete mace, and the din that a rakov of a mace is metama is only when you had a mace that was whole, not when you had a mace that was incomplete. Do Rishonim ask on that shot of Rashi? Because their question is that not every person that's killed loses blood. Let's say somebody was killed by suffocation, by chanika, so that there's nothing missing from the mace. Yet Al Gemara makes a flat, absolute statement that any mace that was killed, there is no din of rakov. And therefore, the Elz Rishonim explain that this is a halach l'moshim Sinai. This has nothing to do with being chaser. This halach l'moshim Sinai that the din of rakov doesn't apply by a mace that was killed. Gufa continues the Gemara. Molotov rakov shenafa l'toicha ofa kol shehu is tamei. Rav Shimon metamei. Another halacha, molu tava rakov shnispaza b'bayis. You have rakov that was spread out over a house. Habay is tamei. The house is tamei. Rav Shimon tar. Rav Shimon says it's tar because the houses in the time of Chazal had an earthen floor. So it's the exact same situation when you have earth mixed into the rakov that we just learned. Rav Shimon says that when earth is mixed into the rakov is not metamei. And therefore, ask the Gemara, these two halachas that we just learned are identical. So why did the Gemara have to say these two halachas that seem to be redundant? The tzricha. The ashmina kamaisa, if we only would have learned the halacha where you have rakov, where some offer fell into it, b'shar behi, that's where the Rabbanan hold its tummy. B'shem decham machnef, because they're all gathered in one place. Avon l'spazer, in the second case where the rakov is spread out over the house, Ema Magdalil of Shimon, maybe there he agrees to Rav Shimon, the Rabbanan will agree to Rav Shimon that it's tar. Dei Mal v'chazer Mal, since the rakov is spread out over the entire house, so it isn't over one spot that you have the rakov, Rav Shimon, the Rabbanan may agree. V'yashmin b'ha, and if we only had the case of Mespazer b'toy chabayis, we can make the argument. B'ha kam Rav Shimon, that's where Rav Shimon said that it's not tamei. Dei Mal v'chazer Mal. Avo b'ha, in the case where you have offer in the rakov, Eimim Moidul Rabbanan, maybe there Rav Shimon will agree to Rabbanan that it's tamei. Therefore, Tzricha, we needed to have both cases to teach us that Rabbanan are always metamei and Rav Shimon is always metamei. Tani Idach, continues the Gemara, Moi Tavit Tavit V'oid Offer Beis HaKfaris. If you have a ladleful of rakov and also some offer of the basic forest mixed into that ladle, the halacha is that it's tamei. The Rabbanan holds it's tamei, and Rav Shimon holds it's tahor. Says the Gemara, "My tamei the Rabbanan." What is the reason of the Rabbanan? Says the Gemara, "Lefisha ef shlemali tarvet void offer basic forest." If you have a ladle full of rakov included in there, some of the offer of the basic forest, if you look at it entirely, you're going to have a Moed Tarvid Rakov. So even though you do indeed have here some Moed, you do have here some offer, you still have the Moed Tarvid Rakov. And the opinion of the Rabbanan is
that as long as you have a Mali Tarvid Rakiv, you're going to have Tuma. The fact that there's another item there is of no significance. Says the Gemara, Hashta the Amrit. So now that we go back to the Shilya, and we say that when we speak about, we say, Hashta Tamed Rav Shimon Shum Soifik Tchilasoi, that by the Rakiv, the reason why if there's offer there is a special rule, because according to Rav Shimon, whenever you have Rakiv there, whenever you don't have pure Rakiv, that's when you have, you don't have Tumas Rakiv. But that, as we just finished explaining, is a unique din regarding the Tumma, a Mole Tarvid Rakiv. So we can't compare that, we can't compare Shilya to that case. So now we come back to the beginning. Gabi Shilya, when we speak about the Shilya, my Tama, why does Rav Shimon hold that the Shilya is Tahor? Because we can't say that it has anything to do with it not being pure Shilya, because you have Rakov mixed in there, because that's a very unique din to Rakov. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rav Yochanan, there's a different reason. There's more other materials, dam, and other material that come along out of the woman's body with the Shilya, and they therefore, with the Vlad, and therefore, Demetama. And the Machloikis therefore explained the Mefarshim between Rav Meir and Rav Shimon, is that Rav Meir says that when we speak about Tumma, these types of Tumma at least, there is no concept of Bittul, whereas Rav Shimon says that there is Bittul even on such situation as well. They both have the exact same concept. They have follow the same principle. Rabbi Lezer, the Tanan, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, Behema Gassa Sheshofa Chororos Dam. If a Behema Gassa expressed a large cake of blood, Hareza to cover, this cake of blood should be buried, Uptur Mechayra. And the mother has any more children, that those children will not be considered a Bechor. The Tanar Rabbi Chiya, Allah, and Rabbi Chiya explained that in a Braisa, that Mishnah, and Matama, this cake of blood that came out of the mother's body, of the animal's body, and Matama Lava Magdav Lava Masa, doesn't have, it's not considered a Nevela, a Nevela we know is Matama, Magdav Masa, this cake of blood will not be considered a Nevela, that it should be Matama Lava Magdav Masa, and therefore he asks the Braisa, if it's not Tomei, it's not considered an Avela might to cover, so why should it be buried? Says the Gemara, says the Bryce, for one reason. By burying this cake of blood, everybody will realize that this mother no longer is subject, that any children that would be born will be obligated to Bechayla. Alma. So we see that Vlad Malyahi, that he considers the first Chaticha of Dam that came out to be considered a Vlad. For were he not to consider it a Vlad, then why would it not be subject, why would the mother, next child, not be a Bechor? But if that's the case, asked the Gemara, if obviously we're looking at this as if it was a child, up to the degree that the next child born to this babe, to this mother, will not be considered a Bechor. So it's a Vlad. If it's a Vlad, it should be Matam of a Magla Masa. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, says Rabbi Yochanan, explaining, because obviously the explanation is, Mishum Bittul Baroiv, Nogaba, here we're referring to the concept of Bittul Baroiv, and therefore, it's even though it's a Vlad, it's Bok Baroiv, and that's why it's not Tommy. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, however, even though Rav Shimon says that if there's a Shilya in the house, as we've been learning for this entire Sugya, the house is not Tamei, we don't look at the Shilya as if it's considered that there's a dead body in the home. Still, the mother, says Rav Yochanan, Rav Shimon will agree, is subject to Tumas later. Amar hu sabla Rav Abba, as muchtam de Rav Yochanan, I will explain to you the basis for Rav Yochanan's opinion. Dama kra, ishi kisazri v'yolda zachar, even what she emits is similar to what she started off with. It's not with a child, because she started off when she had a relationship with her husband, not with a child, just with some zera. Here too, what she emitted turns out to just be liquid. It's enough to have tumas later, tumeya later.